Here's the big thing. If you have an estate plan, potentially you can avoid court involvement, which avoid probate, prevent disputes and legal complications, and a whole lot of legal fees and attorney's fees. If the estate is well-structured going forward, you can help reduce taxes and, again, legal fees, making sure your family and estate and beneficiaries, church, charity, they get what's deserving of them, and you don't lose value because you didn't plan properly.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on Processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
It's The Retirement Trainer with Ed Sedell, a podcast about finding ways to help you become financially fit for your future, no matter what financial shape you're in now. Why is an estate plan so important? And if you have an estate plan completed, are you done? Do you ever have to look at it again? If so, how often should you review it? And then we're just basically going to dial in on the basics. What is an estate plan? This is Leanne Sedell, and here to help us with all of our questions and to give us some guidance to stay in the best financial shape possible, the retirement trainer, Ed Sedell. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Leanne. Boy, you know what? This is a great topic because, I mean, we deal with this stuff day in and day out on a daily basis. So, you know, first of all, let's just say everything that we're going to talk about today is as a layperson, not as there's no legal advice here. We're not attorneys. These are just things that we see day in and day out and have, and we're just talking about it. I mean, we're going on 25 years for EGSI. So that's really, this is more of what we're seeing. And unfortunately, we've got so many stories to share of the good and unfortunately the bad and the ugly on estate planning done right and not done
well,
right.
And honestly, it's with the best intentions. I think everybody goes into this thinking that they've got all their ducks in a row, but we're just going to start with the basics, and we'll kind of touch on some stories that have come into play. So why don't you start off, what is an estate plan?
Honestly, it's really just a set of legal documents. I mean, that's really all it is. And the whole purpose is to outline how your assets and personal wishes are going to be managed and dispersed if you pass, when the good Lord calls you home, or if you're incapacitated. That's really all it is. An estate plan can include wills, trusts. They should include powers of attorney for both finance and healthcare, as well as healthcare directives. So healthcare directives are resuscitate, do not resuscitate. These are things that nobody ever wants to talk about. And we see it all the time. We see this, right? With people that we know, family members, clients, all the families that we serve. People don't want to talk about it, but I can't stress enough, it's not fair to the people you leave behind because then they're trying to figure out what mom wanted, what dad wanted. And
fights break out.
Yeah, the arguments, right? Yeah. And people don't talk to each other. Everyone thinks it's always about money. That's after you pass. But while you're here, the healthcare directives, well, mom told me this. Well, dad sent me a text yesterday. Well, he sent me an email that says, no matter what I said. But if you have it already in place, and then you talk about it and say, this is what I want to have happen, it eliminates a lot of the arguments.
Well, and the things that I'm just going to use some of the situations that we've witnessed, it hurt feelings come into play because of the fact, and it doesn't have to necessarily do with money. I'm going to use an example of like a piece of furniture or a car.
a clock.
And I'm just going to say where the problem comes into play is, these things meant something to you. And when you pass, if you have somebody that you wanted those to go to, it cannot just be something that is expressed verbally without there still being problems. Write it down. You can put it into your estate documents, but I'm just going to say, they want to see it in your handwriting that it was your wishes.
You definitely want it part of your estate planning documents. And here's why I say you need an estate plan. I kind of wrote these down just to make sure I didn't leave anything out, but honestly, it's peace of mind. Not just for you, but your family, right? Those that you leave behind, because really this way your family doesn't have to guess what you want to have happen and how you want things to go.
Yeah.
Here's the big thing is that if you have an estate plan, potentially, and this is key, right? Potentially you can avoid court involvement, which avoid probate, prevent disputes and legal complications, and a whole lot of legal fees and attorney's fees, right? I mean, that's a big deal. And then obviously financial protection for more advanced planning. If the estate is well structured going forward, you can help reduce taxes and again, legal fees, making sure your family and estate and beneficiaries, church, charity, they get what's deserving of them and you don't lose value because you didn't plan properly.
Well, and I guess one of the biggest things that we've run into is these documents are prepared and essentially somebody goes and let's just say the formal way that it was presented was in a binder. And in that binder was, although those documents are reviewed with your estate plan attorney, sometimes you don't really understand what the verbiage is. And there are things called funding letters. And a lot of estate planning attorneys now will help you fund. I'm using that word.
So let's talk about funding, right? Yes. So you get a funding letter. Let's back up because I think it'll make more sense if we lay the groundwork. So anything that has, let's talk about the difference between a will and a trust. I'm going to explain it the way that I understand it, not as an attorney, because I'm not. Although I did stay at Holiday Inn Express one time. No, I'm kidding.
The dad jokes.
Yeah, I know. They just never end.
Keep going.
But really, just for somebody like me, so that I can understand it, a will is basically a letter to the judge that says, hey, judge, I love Leanne. Leanne loves me. If anything happens to me, everything goes to her. If anything happens to her, everything goes to me. If something happens to both of us, it goes to our three boys. And the judge says, oh my gosh, I love it. Greatest plan I've ever heard of in my life. Let's celebrate and announce it to the world. So we're going to put it in the Columbus Dispatch, on social media, yada, 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 and announce it so people can make claims against your estate. All right. I'm way oversimplifying it by every stretch of the imagination, but that's really probate. That's what that is. Okay. Where a trust is a letter to the judge that says, judge, as much as we like you and appreciate everything that you have done for us, we don't need you. We got it all taken care of. And the reason is because everything is going to supposedly, right, pass outside of probate. And now the first thing that we always get questions, we're talking with attorneys and in the initial meeting with clients, they're like, oh, all right, so it can't be contested. No, that's not what it means. Now, a lot of times they're not, right, because the estate's already emptied and it's not contested, but they still can be contested. What I mean is a trust avoids probate because of what you were just saying, which is called the what? The funding letter.
Funding letter.
Right? So the funding letter dictates how the beneficiary should read on all assets.
Exactly.
So anything that has a beneficiary or
transfer
beneficiary
upon
type,
death, yep, whatever.
Beneficiary type statement, yep, is going to avoid probate. So if we think of investment accounts, not including qualified accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, 457s, 403bs, but just regular investment accounts, they're going to have beneficiary statements. Now, all of those retirement accounts that I just named, they're also going to have beneficiary statements. So it could be to you, it could be to me, it could be to their spouses, their kids, their grandkids. But if you have a trust, depending on how you want the trust to read, it's going to go to the trust. And then the trust dictates how those proceeds are going to be distributed, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But here's the hitch. What happens in order for that to occur? What has to happen?
Somebody has to actually change, put a beneficiary on an actual account.
Yeah. The trust has to be funded, right?
Yes.
And so a lot of times people, we've got so many stories, there's just not enough time where the directions are made. Okay, here you go. Here's the funding letter. Go fund the trust. They're like, great. I don't know what that means. So they don't ask, right?
Well, they think that it's an all-encompassing document that does not need an additional document to change that beneficiary with the actual.
They think it's all included.
They think it's all part of the same deal.
Yep.
And that's the one component. There are, I mean, I know estate attorneys out there.
And they do a great job.
They do. They'll send out those funding letters. But traditionally what they say on these funding letters, it'll list the accounts that they're referencing. Life insurance. This goes to your life insurance carrier, and this is how the beneficiary should read. And then you will get a beneficiary statement or TOD, transfer upon death, and you will fill in that information, and your signature solidifies that. So what we have is a lot of people who go to these appointments, they get those funding letters, and the next step isn't taken. Whoever does it, whether they personally do it or they take it to their financial advisor and they say, will you help me fund my trust? it's imperative that you get it done.
Yeah.
Every time we do annual reviews here, our clients hear the exact same thing, and it's so annoying.
POD, TOD, beneficiaries. Okay, all right. And I'm like, all right, it's a broken record. I get it, but this is so important. So I'm going to go through this, and let's talk about just over the last 18 months.
Yeah.
We'll talk about a couple different scenarios and situations, real life stories. We're going to change the names, obviously, maybe not even use them. But all right, so a POD is pay on death. So those are for liquid assets like CDs, bank accounts, et cetera. And this is really important. You want to make sure that those are updated. First of all, any beneficiary statement, whether it's a beneficiary statement, your 401k, 403b, 457, IRAs, whatever it is, as well as PODs, pay on death, which is for your bank accounts, CDs, checking accounts, money markets, and then TODs, transfer on death. So on your home, that should be pretty locked in, but you definitely want to check it every year, as well as vehicles, any real property. You want to look at it every year, the beginning of every year. This is what I say. It's just like your smoke alarms, the batteries in your smoke detectors. You check twice a year. The beginning of every year, or anytime you have an annual review, go through and just pull all your beneficiary statements and make sure they're accurate, because sometimes they're not. When companies are updating their systems, it happens, not often, but sometimes it happens and it wasn't updated properly. And so the new beneficiary isn't on there. Or here's the big one that we've seen a lot, where we're asking all the time, hey, you have this little life insurance policy that's $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and it has an old beneficiary or an old trust name on it. And now, right, because when the trust was updated, it didn't allow for the old trust and the new trust to take over and supersede the old trust, take the place of it. And so now there's probate issues or an additional attorney's fees to have the new trust updated and amended. So these are things, right? Prior preparation prevents pitifully poor performance, right? The seven P's.
And the ones that I find fall through the cracks are not the big accounts, your main investment accounts.
Right.
The ones that fall through the cracks are going to be like, a lot of people like to deal in individual stocks. And I see this all the time. They go through computer shares and they buy their own stock. And it is those online accounts. They do allow you to put beneficiaries on there or transfer upon death. They allow that, but that is a optional item on there. That is never required. When you open an IRA, almost always, you can't even open an IRA anymore
without the beneficiary,
without there being a beneficiary assigned. But now we're running into these little ones. And I will say this, if you're not married, meaning if your spouse has already preceded you in death and you own a car, that's a big thing that we watch happen on a regular basis. They don't put a transfer upon death on the title.
And that's because of the rule, right? The value of over whatever the exact amount is, over $70,000. And they're like, well, you know, it's only a $40,000 car, so it doesn't need to be in a trust. Well, yes and no. It doesn't. It's not a claimable asset. I'm not sure I'm using the right terms, but they still have to determine ownership.
Yep.
And so there are legal fees and court costs involved with that. So instead of spending the, you know, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, whatever it is to do that, spend the $25.
$25 to change your title.
Yep.
And add that on there.
Yep. Now, it's got to be paid off and it can't be leased, but I mean, the car title has to be free and clear.
Yes, we're referring to assets that are free and clear, for sure.
Yep.
But if you have a mortgage on your title, you can still add transfer upon death onto those titles. You can do that.
Depending on mortgage company, and then if you have a trust, I mean, there's a whole lot of things, but yes, typically I think that is the case. But I mean, obviously everything that we're talking about here, you want to check with your attorney before doing anything. But these are some of the basics that you can do without any fee or cost, which is, are my beneficiary statements up to date? All right, I have a trust. I have a funding letter. When you're going through your annual review and they're asking, hey, are your beneficiaries up to date? Your PODs, TODs, instead of just saying yes, make sure that you actually spend the time, especially the little life insurance policies.
Well, and I'm going to say this, it takes a 10-minute phone call to verify that. You can even do that for us. We do that here. We'll make a phone call with you just to verify so that we hear it ourselves. But I'm going to say, why don't you talk a little bit about power of attorney, Ed?
Yeah, this is a big deal. All right. So everyone gets confused between power of attorney, and we'll just talk about a trust, right? Executor versus trustee. So executor is with a will, trustee is with a trust. So a power of attorney for healthcare and finance is only good when the person is living. Okay. Once they are deceased, that is no longer valid, and then it goes to the trustee. So why am I saying this? because financial institutions are now hiring services that search the obituaries 24/7. And we had a case, a client referred to us by a law firm earlier in the year, and tragic. The family member passed away over the weekend. She was a widow. She wasn't on a whole lot of the estate stuff. There were no beneficiaries. It just really wasn't up to date. So they were able to move assets before the account was closed so that that way she could pay her mortgage and get groceries and pay bills. So, and it happened that quick. I think that was in the morning, and by that Monday afternoon, the accounts were closed. I mean, it is that quick. And if you have a POD, then it goes right to you and it avoids probate.
I also think it's really important, even in situations like you're just talking about, everybody says, I mean, I hear this more times than not.
What's that?
You're never too young to put these things in place.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
I get a lot of people sometimes don't think about, like, they'll say, oh, I'm not going to think about life insurance until I have a child, or I'm not going to do such and such until I feel like I'm getting to that age. And I'm just going to say, things happen. Life is short.
And then your health may change, and then you might become uninsurable. And you know what? You made me think of something when you were talking about you're never too young. We tell everyone, as soon as your kids become of age, they hit 18 and they're not married, get a power of attorney, have them sign a power of attorney. And this is just what we have seen, okay, is that more times than not, it doesn't make sense to name 3, 4, or 5, more than one as the actual power of attorney.
Yeah.
You can have contingents after that, because if you have more than one, there could be some infighting, not all the time, but there could be. At least now, if there's just one, they're the ones making the decision. Now you can have a separate one for your finance and a separate one for your healthcare, because a lot of people like to do that to make it fair, right, to their kids and grandkids or whatever it is. But what we've seen in the past to resolve issues before they become issues is to only have one power of attorney listed.
This is something that we offer up to our clients here. Bring in your kids to your actual appointment, because a lot of times explaining, like when I say kids, I'm going to say I have a 84-year-old mother. I'm her kid. Me coming in and learning what she wants, how she wants things done.
Yeah.
This shouldn't wait until you're on your deathbed. As soon as you get it together, start expressing your wishes. My kids, I've already expressed my wishes to Ed, but I've also done that to my kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, they know what I want, and I don't consider myself to be near death. So what I'm going to say...
Are you hiding something from
me? Yeah, what I am going to say is these conversations being had earlier is better. And the open, blunt conversation, it's not like you're sealing your coffin because you've had that discussion. That's not what it's about. It's about those that you leave behind. What kind of pain are they going to go through because you didn't have that conversation?
You didn't want to have that conversation. I skipped over why I was talking about 18-year-olds. So we have so many friends and family members whose kids are going off to college. If they're of age, you have no legal rights. So, but if you have a power of attorney for healthcare, for finance, if they're sick and in college, or even if they're not in college, if they're in trade school, and God forbid they're sick or in an accident, whatever it is, it gives you the legal right to help them.
Yeah.
All right. If they're sick and or incapacitated, and helping them pay their bills, do all the things that are necessary. And this is why an estate plan is so important. And I do recommend seeking legal advice, because you'll have attorneys say, well, not everyone needs a trust. Everyone needs an estate plan. You have a basic estate plan. Here's the strategy for that. And others say, well, if you have at least 100,000 in total assets, you need a trust. There's a whole lot of different theories each way. Look, if you find the right attorney that you're comfortable with and you trust and you're getting the right advice from, that's where you should go.
And it's what we say to our clients. Every client is different. When we put together a financial plan, everybody has different goals, and they have...
Each plan is different completely.
And they're drastically different. So when you sit down with your estate attorney, those are the discussions you have at that time. Then he or she can make the recommendation on what is best for you. I just feel as though a lot of people put this off and they don't want to deal with it. And then by the time they do need to deal with it, the time is too short to do everything that they would need to do.
And in a trust, I mean, you can really do a lot of things with it. You can put in spendthrift clauses, which is, I use this example all the time. You never want to leave a couple $100,000 to an 18-year-old to wind up getting a whatever, some supercharged sports car that someone talked them into getting. But if it's in a trust, they can't get access to it. And that actually happened, right? And so you can protect And what a trust does is it protects the beneficiary sometimes from themselves. So you could say, hey, you know, while they're in trade school or they're in college, college is paid for plus reasonable expenses. And then if whatever's left over at 25, I mean, it's what however you want it to have happen. Or you can say, look, I just want to make sure they're a productive member of society. Do like a dollar for dollar clause. For every dollar earned, you get a dollar out of the trust. I mean, you can be as specific as you want. And here's why that's important. We've had situations in the past where we have gotten phone calls saying, hey, so-and-so wants to buy XYZ. Can you send us whatever it is, $100,000? We're like, well, they don't have $100,000. Well, it's in the trust. That's the trust money. It doesn't belong to them. They're like, yeah, but she wants it. I'm like, well, that's not up to her. That's up to the trust. And so it's a get out of jail free card for the trustee, because the trustee is not having to make that decision, because the benefactor, the person who left that, already decided, hey, this is what's going to happen. They're not getting $100,000 for a sports car, a boat, a horse, right? And that's just not happening. And if that wasn't in there, then the trustee is left up to making that decision. And boy, talk about a heavy weight on their shoulders.
And the one last thing, again, when you're putting together your estate documents, and again, we're talking not just financial, not just investment accounts, those types of things. If there are things that matter to you, I mean, we have stories where there's siblings that are going into the house moments after they die to capture what they want from the house, and it's causing infighting with siblings. Yeah. And you just, if you can avoid that, if you knew, are you never want to assume that that's going to be the route, but if you can protect against it, why would you not?
We've heard stories where they walk in and there's post-it notes on all the items with the names of the kids on it. Yeah. But you know what? I mean, and video cameras, taking pictures and videos. Hey, this is what it is, or have it written down. Look, the clearer and more concise it is, the better off everyone's going to be after the good Lord calls you home.
And for instances like I'm just going to talk about some of the documents that we put together for whether a power of attorney is stepping in for you. We have password sheets. We have medication sheets. These things
are survivor checklist.
Gold.
Yes.
When you have somebody who's caring for you and all they've got sitting in front of them is a bunch of pill bottles, let's just say it was last minute they came in. They don't know what's going on. It's imperative. Like, you do not want to be being their advocate and their care provider without knowing some of this.
And passwords. Passwords are a big thing, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be reminded by Facebook of a birthday when someone's since passed 4 or 5 years, but every year on the birthday, right? You can't get in and change it. So having those passwords and putting that password sheet is really, really invaluable for all your banking stuff, all your social media, all of those things going forward.
And just to know the accounts that exist.
Yes.
So a lot of times people will open up a checking account for a Christmas club and they don't include that. It's not something that was initially when they went and saw their attorney. So these things come up afterwards, and that's why it's an annual event. So don't make it something where you touch it once and you don't touch it again for another 10 years.
I'm done. I wipe my hands of it. No, it's all done. It's all good. Is it really? Is it?
Well, make it part of your annual review. It should be part, whether it's with your financial advisor. You don't always have to go back to your attorney, but you at least have to look at the documents again and make sure that your list of assets is the same. They haven't changed.
And if you have a trust and you want it to be in the trust, that funding letter dictates exactly how that beneficiary statement should read on the beneficiary statement.
I think we've beat this one to death.
You think we have? I don't know, ma'am.
There are many more stories that we could tell about these things, just because a lot of times we get clients on board just based off the fact that they don't know where else to go and how to navigate the very long journey. So if you have questions, give our office a call at 614-526-4118, or you can reach out to us by email at info@egsifinancial.com. You can go onto our website. Again, that's egsifinancial.com, and you can sign up there to get information back from us. Again, I think this is really important stuff to tackle on the front side. Do not wait. And thanks for all the good information.
No, thank you, Leanne.
Hey, when was the last time you tested of your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance. Because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the retirement fitness plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the retirement fitness plan at egsifinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619.